Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those bit swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
On a Monday night, we are somewhat unexpectedly welcoming you into a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. My name's Matt Pauly. Great to have you with us. We're with you until 8 o'clock. We weren't supposed to be here. We were supposed to be having some baseball in the air right now, but turns out there was weather in Detroit, and they just went ahead and postponed today's game, and a doubleheader is going to be coming up tomorrow. I should check and see if rain is actually coming.
It's actually raining there?
Yeah, I'm
But while you're doing that, Matt...
Hi, that's Ethan Hannaford, by the way.
Oh, hey, guys. Yeah, well, Matt, you know that this business is all about making adjustments on the fly, and just part of the business, and here we are.
It is raining, evidently, based off the radar. The radar would indicate that rain, and pretty heavy rain, is coming down. Some of the yellow stuff on the radar coming down in Detroit, according to the good folks at AccuWeather. So here we are. We've got a two-hour program. If you want to join us today, you can do so calling, texting, tweeting. We're here for you. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. Daniel Esteves is going to join us in about 10 minutes from Fox 2. Nate Gatter is going to join us at about 7:20. At some point, I'm going to have Kevin Wheeler. I'm gonna be totally honest with you. Gonna take the curtain and just pull this thing back. I've got a conversation with Kevin that I've already recorded, and it's about 15 minutes long, which is a long interview for a show like this. So it may air after I get done with Daniel, but if I go too long with Daniel, I'm not gonna have enough time to run Kevin. So if that's the case, we're gonna push Kevin back to next hour.
You weren't kidding about really opening up the curtain.
Just telling folks what's
full
going
disclosure.
On. Not quite sure when Kevin's gonna be on because I gotta have enough time to do it. And if I'm having just a fantastic conversation with Daniel, well, I'm not gonna cut it short just to, and if that happens, then I may have to cut it a little bit short with Nate. So there you go. Daniel, the pressure is on you to really bring it today. And if you get Kevin pushed back to the 7 o'clock hour, you know that you did your job here today on KMOX for sure. Cardinals have announced, by the way, what they're going to be doing tomorrow in terms of starting pitching, because today it was supposed to be Steven Matz against Kenta Maeda. Well, they are going to go with Kyle Gibson for game one tomorrow. Matz will go in game number two. I've not seen yet what the Tigers are going to do. I would assume they'll just stick with what they were planning on, which would be Kenta Maeda in game one. And then old friend Jack Flaherty would start game number two. Is that what it's going to be? Oh, no, Flaherty in the first game. Okay, so there you go. So thank you to Ethan for finding that for me. So game one tomorrow is going to be Jack Flaherty against the Cardinals. I don't know how to evaluate. I don't feel like he's going to go like 6 1/3 giving up four runs on eight hits. Like, I feel like he's either going to be 7 innings, one run, or 4 innings, 7 runs. Like something like, I think he's either going to just shove against the Cardinals, or it's going to go horribly, horribly, horribly wrong for him against the Cardinals. And I'd be more worried just based off the fact that the Cardinals have not been hitting especially well recently, I would be more concerned that they struggle against them. But Ethan, you see it all the time. Last year, the Matthew Liberatore game against the Tampa Bay Rays, it happens all the time. Drew Rahm last year, when he got the chance to pitch against Baltimore, that was his really only really good start at the big league. When you're facing off against your former team, you find a little something extra, and it just seems like with Jack Flaherty, there might even be a little something more there.
It's hard to exactly name what that thing is, but you still find the sense in your mind that it's going to be there. And not that Flaherty's time in St. Louis was necessarily bad. Obviously, it could have been much more than it was, but there's parts of Jack Flaherty's character that I think a lot of fans would say it probably just didn't necessarily fit in with the mindset and the beliefs and the values of some of the organization. Not to say that in any way that is entirely negative. It just is different, and I think people don't really like different. So that's going to be an interesting thing to keep an eye on is there that extra? I'm sure that there will be something in pregame or postgame, there'll be something discussed as far as where that motivation comes from.
Well, this will be interesting because generally starting pitchers do not talk to the media day that they pitch. I don't know if clubhouses were open today in time for the St. Louis media to go into the Detroit clubhouse to talk to Flaherty. So I don't know if we will hear anything from Flaherty. If we do, I would think it would come out today, because generally the starting pitcher just doesn't talk to the media on the day he pitches. That's just the way things generally work in baseball. I don't know. And you're right. Like there is a certain contingent of Cardinals fans that simply did not like Jack Flaherty because he talked about non-baseball things, and some of his ideas and thoughts might not go along the same line as other people. And when that happens, and this is somewhat human nature, but it certainly happens there, when somebody does not agree with you and you don't like that they don't agree with you, and then they don't perform well, you are very quick to jump and bring attention to the fact that person is not performing well. So there were moments that Jack Flaherty really, 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 really struggled. And I think there was a portion of the fan base that was more willing to come at him over it. Excuse me. More willing to come at him over it because he had spoken about non-baseball things. He didn't do the shut up and dribble, to use the cliche when it comes to that. And I don't want to spend time having the conversation on anything that he had to say or whether or not it is an athlete's place to speak those sort of things. Everybody can do whatever they want to do. But the bottom line is, if you do say things that are controversial or polarizing, you have to accept the fact that there's going to be people in the fan base that don't like you. I don't know, but I'm not trying to go down this path too much, but there's people who don't like actors or comedians or athletes or whatever because of their political beliefs. And then they don't support, like they won't go to a movie. Like, I don't like this actor's political beliefs, and so I'm not going to go support them with a movie, especially when the movie's like not, it doesn't have anything political. I've never been that. If I know an actor's political beliefs and they happen to be different than mine, but I really, really like that actor, I've never once said, you know what? I can't support this guy because he doesn't believe what I believe. That's just not the way that I'm wired.
You have the ability to separate, right? To separate the beliefs from the product that
this guy's
put
an
out.
Idiot, but he's a great actor,
right?
Like, yeah, so that sort of thing. So I would never call somebody an idiot. What
well,
am I talking
you just
about?
Did.
No, I would never do that. We don't do name calling here. So, so it'll be fun to see Jack Flaherty go against the Cardinals coming up tomorrow in what's going to be a long day of baseball here on KMOX. 2:40 for first pitch of, I'm going to get that wrong so many times today, by the way. 2:45 for first pitch tomorrow. That means our coverage is going to begin at 1:50 tomorrow afternoon, and we'll hunker down for a full day of baseball. Up next, our good friend Daniel Esteve from Fox 2. He is going to join us as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports open line right here.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
On KMOX, an unexpected Graybar Sports open line. We were expecting to have baseball today. Instead, even better, I get to talk with my good friend Daniel Esteve. You see him on Fox 2 and Channel 11. He joins us right now. Hello, Daniel.
Hey, man. How's it going?
It's going well. Thank you for saying yes as we were putting together a show at the very last minute.
Hey, I've been there, and it's never a problem when I get the chance to chat with Matt Pauly.
So what's your takeaway on where the Cardinals are at? Obviously below 500, last place team, but in many ways seems like they're a little bit better than that. We've seen good pitching. We've seen them win the last two series. I feel like there are some positive stories, but we also know what the record is. So how do you evaluate this team with where they're at right now?
I'm such a tough person to have this conversation with because I will be an undying optimist till the very end. And last year was a great example of it. The Blues this season was a great example of it, and they certainly teased us right till the very end. But honestly, looking at it from an objective perspective, what is it, 4 wins in the last six? You mentioned it, 2 series wins. And when you look at the things that were issues heading into the season, specifically that bullpen, I mean, you look at Helsley, you look at Romero, you look at the talent that you have there, coupled with the fact that a guy like Sonny Gray has been pitching well, Lance Lynn looks okay, you got to be optimistic in this situation. It feels like the Cardinals just had a tough run early, and they're finding their spark, and that's what you'd expect when you try to address those issues head on. Maybe it just took a little bit of time for them to find a rhythm, and then if they get the bats going, then you have yourself a team that can contend for an NL Central.
How concerned are you about the lack of run scoring and the lack of hitting so far from this team?
It's such a streaky thing. I'm really encouraged by some of the young talent. Of course, everyone's going to see the headlines with Jordan Walker being sent down to AAA. But, man, the way Mason Wynn's been playing, how encouraging is that? Nolan Arenado found it after a brief stint playing well below his expectations. But Paul Goldschmidt's really the only one that's been a doozy for me, and he's somebody that has had slow periods. And you've got to imagine he's going to find his rhythm. Once he does, I feel like you've got a pretty complete lineup where you can get hits all over the place. Brendan Donovan's been batting well, per usual. Lars Nootbaar, a bit streaky, but he's finding his form as well. I feel like there's a lot of potential in this team. It's just got to all click at once, and we're still waiting for that to happen. I think Paul Goldschmidt finding his rhythm could be a catalyst.
Yeah, at what point is it not early anymore? Because we do keep talking about, well, it's early, but at some point the calendar keeps flipping around, and it's not early anymore.
Yeah, I think the Brewers will probably dictate that, right? The rest of the NL Central will dictate that. I mean, you look at the rest of the league, and by league, I mean division. I mean, all teams were above 500 except the Cardinals. That's pretty ridiculous when you're looking at teams like the Pirates, the Reds, even the Cubs to a certain degree. But the Brewers have been playing pretty well. Getting swept by them certainly didn't help. But, you know, as long as you're in the fight, you're in the fight. That's going to dictate how you're playing. I know Cardinals Nation has high expectations, and as they should. But if you're in it, you always have a chance to do something, especially come playoff time. So right now, still very early, and I feel comfortable saying that. And so long as you're continuing to compete with the rest of the teams in your division, I think you can never count yourself out.
Daniel, you're a Mizzou guy, or Mizzou made, as you Mizzou folks like to refer to yourself as. What do you make? Do you like the hiring of Laird Veach as the new athletic director?
Yeah, you know, I was going through his press conference, and it was interesting. I had mixed feelings about it. Maybe just a bit of his maybe nervous energy coming out of it didn't give me a ton of confidence, but he comes in with a great resume. What he did at Memphis is pretty impressive. And when you look at the momentum across Missouri sports in general, it's really difficult to think that you can mess it up, maybe. You've got the stadium renewal coming through. You've also got the momentum with Dennis Gates, Eli Drinkwitz, of course, with the Cotton Bowl win. And then on the women's side, even softball right now is performing at a high clip. So I really think he's coming into a good situation. And given what he was able to do at Memphis, you've got to be positive about it, right?
Yeah, I would think so. And I mean, his number one asset, it seems like, or number one quality would be the better way to say it, is he does have the ability to go out and fundraise. And it feels like Missouri is once again kind of at a crossroads moment, because they got to keep up with everything else going on in the SEC, and facilities and name, image, likeness are a big part of that. And that's all connected to money. And they've brought somebody in who is known for his ability to raise money.
That's quite literally the name of the game. And the stadium renovation is a good example of that. I mean, they needed to do something to add to the allure of Memorial Stadium or Faurot Field at Memorial Stadium to look like the rest of the SEC. And the renditions I've been looking at, keeping the hill and closing up the bowl, looks pretty impressive. Probably going to fill it with suites because those are the big money makers. But that's the name of the game, to your point. And you bring in somebody with that ability, it's going to pay dividends. And I'll tell you this, the first time I spoke to Desiree Reed-Francois, I also had this kind of indication that, you know what, speaking wasn't super clean. First couple interviews, maybe a little nervous. And she came into her own later in her tenure. So I'm willing to be patient on it. And like I said, when you come into a situation, the momentum you've got with the University of Missouri, I feel like you've got to be, I'm going to say optimistic for the 15th time this conversation, Matt. I'm sorry, but
that's good.
It's a good example and a good hire, given the specific type of AD that you needed to get.
Daniel, it's one of the reasons I like talking to you and being around you. You are a beacon of positivity, and it's good for everybody to be around. So
I'm sure most of our more cynical listeners aren't appreciating the blind confidence I've got, but I'm a Cowboys fan, I'm a Tottenham Hotspur fan, and I'm a Dallas Mavericks fan after yesterday. So it's the only thing that gets me through, to be honest.
Goodness. Fair. You know what? The Mavericks series is fine. They'll be okay.
I sure hope so.
I think so.
I sure hope so.
We'll revisit that at some point. It does seem like, while, you know, hiring coaches and leading its staff and raising money is a big part of the AD's job, at least for now, if Missouri football continues to perform at a pretty high level, it might also be the athletic director's job to, you know, fend off other schools from getting Drinkwitz almost on an every year basis. That seems like it's a huge part of the job now.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting. Drinkwitz in particular, I had heard some rumors, especially earlier in his tenure, before, you know, he had kind of his marquee season last season, that he wasn't all bought in Columbia, and he always talked a very high game, even though he truly hadn't accomplished too much post Appalachian State. And that always gave me this kind of eerie feeling about him. But I don't know if something changed, or maybe I was misinformed, but my goodness, the way he looks like he's bought into the program has been pretty impressive. And the fact that that's finally translated to actual success is pretty intriguing. So you've got to think once you're at an SEC program, you've reached at least the pinnacle in terms of conference, right? And I can't imagine another position aside from, you know, the big, big dogs, maybe a Bama. You could probably even throw, you know, an LSU or even a University of Texas. I'm sure I'm missing a couple schools that could pull him away from that. But for the most part, you don't see him just leaving for a better opportunity just to say he is. I think Mizzou is offering enough to keep a name, a successful name, like an Eli Drinkwitz or some other name with the way they've been performing lately.
Let's get to City SC a little bit before we let you go. They did not play this past weekend. Last time they played was that 3-3 draw against Sporting Kansas City on the road. They're going to be on the road this weekend against Houston. It just seems like they're not yet really gaining traction. They're not losing games, but they're not winning very many either. And other teams are starting to pick up some points against them. It's, for me, I'm having a hard time completely grasping who this team is and what they need to do to kind of pour some gas on the fire.
Yeah, that's what a lot of ties will do to you. But the reality is I'm looking at the standings. They sit ninth on 12 points. Real Salt Lake sits first with 18 points. There's a two-game difference between ninth place and first place. So the reality is, yeah, it's taking St. Louis City time to find its rhythm, but it feels like the West is going to be so tight, similar to, I guess you could argue, the NL Central with the Cardinals, even though it's much earlier there. The MLS is tight, and the competition is stiff. So there is some truth to this constant conversation we've had with Coach Bradley Carnell on knowing how not to lose. Tim Parker said the exact same thing in our one-on-one conversation recently. Knowing how not to lose is important, but at some point you need to know how to win. And I will say in their last two games, a win and a draw at Sporting KC, that draw at Sporting KC is a draw you can look back on and say, that's a well-earned draw. That's one that you probably look at, and despite the missed opportunities, you can be okay with it. Tough rivalry matchup on the road, but you do need to start stringing some wins together. And I think a Houston team on the road is going to be important. You managed to win at home against Austin. Yeah, road games are tough, but I think Houston would be intriguing. And especially given the fact that Sam Adeniran's whole saga seems like it's finally come to an end. What better way to return to the pitch than going to your hometown and putting together a hat trick? How impressive would that be?
It would be something for sure. Well, you mentioned your conversation with Tim Parker. That's part of the Wembley's Game podcast that you produce on an every week basis. That was from a couple weeks ago this past week. I know you talked with Tom Franklin, known as the soccer zombie. Give folks a plug for your soccer podcast, Wembley's Game.
Yeah, it's been such a great time. Honestly, I really wanted to find some avenue to talk soccer a bit more, just because that's been a field I've really enjoyed covering, and certainly playing as well on the side in the various local leagues we've got around St. Louis. But yeah, I wanted an outlet to learn more about the game and also communicate with other fans and people involved with the sport. So I figured my voice in soccer isn't profound enough for people to care about, so why not just reach out to the incredibly talented people we have both in St. Louis and beyond. And that's been a great example. Not only my access to St. Louis City SC, but we've had Ty Keogh, an absolute legend here, Jim Leaker, Hall of Fame here in St. Louis, Lindsay Kennedy Eversmeyer. We've had just some incredible people join the podcast just to hear their stories, give them a space to talk about their views on the game, their views on different teams, leagues, and more importantly, their views on their experiences and how it shaped their lives. And it has been so much fun. And we've got a good episode coming out this week with a very familiar voice, I will say. But that's all I'll say on that.
Okay, we'll be waiting to see what that is. Again, the podcast is Wembley's Game. You can find it where you find podcasts. Just get to Daniel's Twitter account at Daniel J. Esteve, and he's always got that linked. Daniel, thanks so much for the time. We'll do this again very, very soon.
Appreciate it, man. Always, man. We'll talk soon.
All right, very good. That's Daniel Esteve joining us here on a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. How are you feeling about the Cardinals following their weekend where they take 2 out of 3 against the Mets, but could have had a series sweep? They come up a little bit short yesterday. We'll go back through the weekend and some of the big storylines and talking points out of the weekend. That's coming up next as we roll on with the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Appreciate you being with us tonight. If you're tuning in looking for Cardinals baseball, well, they got postponed, and they're going to play a doubleheader in Detroit coming up tomorrow. Cardinals are coming off a weekend where they take 2 of 3 from the Mets, but they let one get away yesterday. They were one strike away from winning, but end up losing in 11 innings. So close to a series sweep, you still take 2 out of 3. You don't begrudge a series victory, but you do acknowledge the fact that they were very, very close to a series sweep. How are you feeling about this team right now? Are you feeling a little bit better? Are you still negative? Have you always felt that they've got a pretty good shot? We'll welcome your phone calls, your text messages, and your tweets. 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text, or you tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. Our first caller up is KC. He has called, and he is on a Sports Open Line. Hey, KC.
Hey, Matt. How you doing?
Doing all right.
I wanted to talk to Stephen. I'm a fan of his because he's always in his program with a key smiling, you know. So I wanted to tell him that. But anyway,
he's the best.
Yeah, we were one strike away from sweeping, and what I didn't understand about that whole scenario is that everybody knows that Bader, he has trouble hitting off-speed pitches, and I just thought that was a bad pitch, a high pitch in his eyes where he can handle it. I just thought that was a bad pitch.
Casey, I'll answer that for you real quick, and then okay. I'm not going to hang up on you. So Liberatore said after the game that when he released that pitch, the idea was for it to be way high out of the zone and be a chase pitch, and he just completely missed his location on it.
Okay. All right. That explains it because I'm sitting to myself. So I'm sitting there and say, go give something, give them some kind of breaking pitch. But anyway, they won the series. Right now, I'm hoping that they can either win the series with Detroit or either sweep Detroit, and that'll put them close to .500, where we all thought that they were probably that's the way that this team will end up, is probably a .500, unless for some reason they can go on a winning streak. But I'm satisfied with the team at this point. Thank you.
Casey, appreciate the phone call for sure. Good positive outlook. I think there's a lot of is this a perfect team? No, it's not a perfect team. And I am startled by the lack of offensive production so far. It made its rounds here on KMOX last week. I know Kevin Wheeler played it during the DGS, and it was all over social media. Buster Olney does a podcast, and he had one of the ESPN researchers on. And this probably isn't true after the last – this statement was true going into the Mets series. I didn't look at the extra base hits this past weekend and the velocity of the pitches where the extra base hits came in on. But going into the Mets series, the Cardinals had 2 extra base hits this year on pitches that had velocity of 95 miles per hour or more. That is a damning statistic. Again, I'd have to go back and look at the StatCast numbers from this past weekend and see if any of those home runs or doubles were against pitches of 95 miles per hour or more. But even if it was, the point remains the same, that all season long, if you want to trace the Cardinals' issues offensively, it's their lack of being able to handle velocity. And I know there's people who don't want to hear this. I know it because I talk to you all the time and I see it on Twitter. There was a chart that I think J.J. Cooper from Baseball America may have posted it. I'm not sure. It's a few months old, but it was a strike zone, and you know it did like the quadrants of the strike zone, like the 9 separate quadrants, and it did batting average against when pitches in those quadrants, and one of them was with pitches that were like, you know, high velocity. I don't know what the cutoff was, 95, 96, 97, 98, 90. I don't know what the cutoff was. But it showed the batting average against in all those quadrants when pitches are that. And then it also showed it against lesser velocity pitches. And the thing that was most notable was a middle pitch with high velocity has less of a batting average against it than a low velocity pitch that's paint in the corner. And that's what people don't want to hear sometimes, but it's the God's honest truth. And there are stats that back it up. If you throw 100 miles per hour, middle, right down the plate, or you throw a dinky little like 89 mile per hour fastball that just paints the corner perfectly, statistically, hitters are going to hit the pitch that touches the corner more than they're going to the middle heater. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't locate. Locating is a huge part of pitching. I'm not trying to dismiss locating. I'm not saying, hey, you throw 100, you know what, just throw a middle down all the time. That's not what I'm saying. And obviously, that's in kind of a, you know, that's in a filter where you're just looking at single pitches. When you're pitching effectively, you're using both sides of the zone. You're going low, you're going high, like you're going all over the place. You're sequencing pitches. So one pitch plays off another. And the statistics that I just mentioned can't account for that. It's raw. Every single pitch is being valued in the same sort of way. But not being able to handle velocity at all, which is essentially what the Cardinals have been most of this season. Again, up until this past weekend, two extra base hits against pitches at 95 miles per hour or more. That's not good. And that's the area where they've got to get a little bit better. Text message from the 573 says, I'm growing really tired of all these comments I see online calling for Oliver Marmol and John Mozeliak to be fired. Last time I checked, neither bat or throw pitches, and the hate on Liberatore is obnoxious. Going three innings in such a high-leverage situation, he did good. Just hate that Bader was able to get that hit. Yeah, so I think I like Oliver Marmol. I do. I think he's a perfectly fine manager. I think most of the issues that we've seen from the Cardinals between last year and this year have not been so much connected to Marmol. I think it's been more about roster construction. Listen to all the way to what I'm saying here, because the first words that come out of my mouth, you're going to go, come on. But just listen to what I'm saying here. In some ways, I kind of feel bad for John Mozeliak right now. And this is why. He went into the offseason knowing that they had to fix the pitching. They had fixed starting pitching, and they had to fix relief pitching. And so, still early on in the season, but essentially that was the goal, and it's worked. Starting pitching for the Cardinals have been pretty darn good. Relief pitching for the Cardinals has been phenomenal, especially when the Cardinals have late leads. After they blew save after save after save after save last year, they now have the best save percentage in the National League. It has been fantastic. He went into the offseason with a goal to fix pitching, and so far in a very small sample size, it's mostly worked. What hasn't worked is the hitting. And some people are going to say, well, you should have seen that coming a long way away. I didn't. I think this was a pretty good. I still think this is going to be a good offensive club, but they're not performing right now to the level. So they had an offseason where they went into fixed pitching. So far, they've mostly done that, but they're not hitting, and they got to figure that out at some point in time.
My question is to the people that say that the front office should have known that there was going to be a hitting struggle. Where? What positions, what players, what implications down the road? Where was the evidence that showed that this was going to be the level of struggle? Like, what sort of insight would there have been out there for anyone to have any idea that when you look at the individual player and the track records that we have seen so far, all of a sudden that this team from pretty much 1 through 9 would go into a team-wide slump?
Yeah. If I'm going to play devil's advocate on that one, I would say you could look at last year and maybe the lack of hitting with runners in scoring position and losses. Because when they lost games last year, they had games like yesterday where they just weren't hitting with runners in scoring position. Now, the overall numbers for the year, especially up until the deadline where the team changed, but if you just stop the stats at the trade deadline last year, they were not a bad team hitting with runners in scoring position, but they were a bad team hitting with runners in scoring position when they were when they lost games. So I think for some, they would watch what happened in a lot of the losses last year where the offense was a little bit quiet, and that led to the belief that they should have done a little bit more offensively coming into this season. 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet as well. We'll continue to take your phone calls and your text messages coming up in just a moment. Talking through all things Cardinals baseball on the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up hour number one of the program and hour number two, our good friend Nate Gatter and our good friend Kevin Wheeler are each going to join the program. Baseball, if you would like to, by calling or texting 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. Tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air. Lisa has given us a call. Hey, Lisa, you're on Sports Open Line.
Hey, guys. So, Cardinal fan for a long, long time, but I really am surprised when people say they didn't see something last year. The Cardinals were the worst team when the bases were loaded. They were 19th in runs scored. They were 1,125 runners left on. So I just question when people say they didn't see something, they weren't looking. I think the pitching was so bad last year that that was overlooked. And there's something, Matt, I really want to know this. Who on this team has the it factor? Who do you feel, because who do you feel steps up? Who do you think steps up in the big moments?
That's a good – it should be Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt because they're supposed to be your big guys in the middle of the order. Right now, I mean, Arenado is hit with runners in scoring position, but I think to your point, Lisa, he's not hitting home runs. He's not and he's the one guy hitting with runners in scoring position. I would – to your original point, and not that you're wrong, I just – I have a hard time judging teams on situational statistics because I don't know how you fix situational. All I know is how you fix overall stuff. And from an overall standpoint, they were a pretty good hitting team last year, and that's what I was expecting out of them this year.
But they got to score, Matt. They got to score runs. The teams that win, I can't understand. They bases loaded. They were the absolute worst in baseball. I mean,
so how do you fix that, Lisa? How do you fix that?
Well, then you've got to figure out how to get athletes that can produce, like, know to shorten their swing to get a fly ball. It's amazing that Albert can shorten a swing and get a fly ball and also had 700 home runs. But other teams figure it out. I mean, that's what bothers me. Other teams, I mean, they were last, Matt, in a lot of things. Last. And then people say, oh, well, we thought they'd be better. How did you think we'd be better? I mean, where did the offense change?
I would also encourage you to look at the numbers ending on August 1st. I don't judge them on what happened after the trade deadline. That wasn't a real baseball team out there.
Well, I mean, then we're just cherry picking.
Look at the guys who are on the roster after August 1st. I'm not cherry picking anything. I'm looking at guys who are going to be
Arizona
involved.
Now,
I don't care what Uniel Caracudo did last year.
Yeah, and Arizona had a ton of injuries last week.
Okay, Lisa, I appreciate the phone call. I appreciate you challenging me a little bit. I always enjoy those kind of conversations. I understand that people are going to think I'm cherry picking. I think she makes a valid response when you say you can't cherry pick stats. I don't think I am cherry picking stats when I look at stats through August 1st.
You have to look at from that point last year in the season compared to right now. Who is on the roster? Who isn't? Who is injured?
They weren't world beaters up until August 1st last year. They hit .245 and they had a .726 OPS. So that's where they were at until the trade deadline when the team just absolutely changed. And when you look at where they're at right now, they're at .217 with a .636 OPS.
Yeah, so it's not great.
So if they were just... if their offensive numbers, as flawed as they may have been, to Lisa's point, as flawed as they might have been offensively in situational hitting, where they did not drive in runs with runners on in scoring position, I'm not arguing that at all. In losses, they really struggled in that. But even with all that, if you take their profile of an offensive club from last year, what their stats were at the trade deadline, and you applied them to what this team is right now, there is a good chance that this would be a first-place club. And I know you can't do that, but the point is, if their offense right now was matching what they did last year, they would have at least two or three more wins.
He also talked about the importance in shortening up your swings and how good Albert Pujols was at that. And yes, that is a much more traditional, right, baseball mindset. But it's important. And I will say this, the Cardinals this year, the reason that they have won any sort of games offensively that they have is because of their ability to play small ball and score runs in different ways. And that's been a huge key.
We've got a lot coming up in hour number two. Nate Gatter and Kevin Wheeler will each join us. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.